Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, part-time pop-up boutique sponsor.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that respects the past, not just because we love classic films. We respect it because it's so easy to forget the things in life that once wowed us. That's why, anyway, the three of us on occasion do a look back at things that we've seen that we think deserve a second look. Things such as classic movies and even, in this era of streaming, a miniseries or two. We're going to take turns doing so, and I'm going to start. Anyone who has ever paid attention to what I've written for the Spokesman Review or broadcast over Spokane Public Radio likely knows that I have a particular affection for foreign film. That's why both my selections are indeed foreign, both being works by the Romanian writer-director Cristian Munju. The first is his 2007 film 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days, which won 3 awards at the Cannes Film Festival, including the top prize, the Palme d'Or. The setting is 1980s Romania, still in the grips of then-dictator Ceausescu's communist rule. The pregnant university student Gabita, played by Laura Valeriu, wants to have an abortion, which at the time was illegal, and so she turns to her more capable roommate, Otilia, played by Anna Maria Marinka, for help. What follows is what the late Roger Ebert called, quote, a journey of frustration, stupidity, duplicity, cruelty, and desperation set against a background of a nation where if it weren't for the black market, there'd be no market at all, unquote. Considering how things have changed in the United States since the overturn of Roe v. Wade 3 years ago, Munju's film may be more relevant today than it ever was.
Well, I saw this movie when it originally came out, and I saw it twice, actually, in the theater because it had just won the Palme d'Or. And it was around the time that we had started getting movies from Romania, what was called then the Romanian New Wave. And I think this is probably the high water mark of that movement. And I just remember being totally knocked sideways by this film. It is a punch in the gut. It leaves you with a pit in your gut. And I think despite the fact that it does have these harrowing sequences in it, the scenes that stick with me about 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days are the scenes of almost, I don't want to say helplessness, but where our main character just doesn't know what to do with what's happening around her. And she's sort of our avatar as we look on. And yeah, I mean, if you haven't seen this movie, it's absolutely worth checking out. But it does take both a strong stomach,
a lot of fortitude,
and some countenance, I think. But it's very much worth seeing.
And I think that the one thing we have to remember is, in contrast to other communist countries, they were discouraging or making abortion illegal in Romania. And we saw the fallout from that in terms of the orphanage situation and so forth. So this is a very powerful film. And it's, you know, for a male filmmaker to make this film and tap into the sort of feelings of the women who were involved, I thought was really notable.
Yeah, we're going to notice that when the second film in the second half, he does have a very woman's way of looking at the world. At any rate, Mary Pat, what are you going to bring?
Well, I'm going to bring forward something or someone who has achieved some measure of success or, you know, I guess visibility over the past few years, most notably a recent documentary that was on my top 10 list. So I'm going to look at a couple of films by Mati Diop. And so she's a French-Senegalese filmmaker. Her uncle apparently was a famous filmmaker in Senegal. But Dahomey is a documentary, but it's not told in the typical documentary fashion because it deals with the repatriation of artifacts and important historical pieces of art and culture from Benin that is being repatriated from the French. But it's told from the perspective of the artifacts, or one artifact in particular. And you can see his journey back to his homeland. And then the end of that film is sort of a discussion about politics and culture and colonialism and racism and classism and so forth. And so I thought Dahomey was a really compelling film that was on my top 10 list for 2024. And that follows on the heels of another documentary that she made several years before called A Thousand Sons, in which she goes back and finds the star of her uncle's film, Tukibuki.
His 1973 film.
Right. And interviews him to see what his life path has been since his starring turn in this particular film.
Yeah, and that documentary, Dahomey, which again is directed by Mati Diop, It reminded me a lot of movies that were coming out during the French New Wave in particular.
True.
Where it's taking this, you know, traditional form, in this case, the cultural documentary, and sort of breaking it wide open and finding new ways to tell these stories. And you're right that even though it's only about an hour and some change, it's a short feature. It really does divide itself into those two halves. The first half being the story of the artifacts, and we get this kind of dreamy narration. And we're not totally sure which of the artifacts is talking to us, but one of them sure is. And then the second half is this, it's almost like a discussion amongst college students in like an open forum. And what's fascinating about that section of the film is that our feelings are kind of pinballing around with all of the, like, everyone's kind of bringing up points where you think that is a good point, you know, that's a good point too. And it just sort of leaves you with the sense of all of this is very messy and nobody knows exactly how to solve it. And so, yeah, it's
which is the story of many African countries, emerging democracies as they are playing out. One thing I wanted to point out about Diop's films is that her documentaries feel like narrative films. And her narrative films,
which I'm going to discuss in the second half.
Yeah. So it's interesting. All right. Now, Nathan, what about you?
Well, in thinking about, I guess, buried treasures, if that's what we're calling them, I did pick two specific movies, but I'm using them as jumping off points to talk about two directors who I think are themselves sort of buried treasures. And I'm starting with a 1987 movie called Made in Heaven, which was directed by Alan Rudolph, who began as an assistant director for Robert Altman and then sort of found his own style. He really flourished in the 1980s, these unusual, stylish, cryptic movies about adult relationships that also sort of play around with genre. So Choose Me, Trouble in Mind, The Moderns, and Made in Heaven, they're all worth seeking out. And this movie in particular stars Timothy Hutton. And at the beginning of the film, sometime in the 1950s, he's a young man and he dies in an accident and goes to heaven. And he falls in love with the angel, I guess, who's kind of taking him around to show him the place, played by Kelly McGillis. And they fall in love. And she's never been on Earth. And because of the way that heaven works, they're not allowed to be together. And as the movie goes on, they end up on Earth in reincarnated forms. And then the movie sort of follows these two souls, beings, whatever you want to call them, as they go off on different paths before they perhaps eventually come back together. And I know that sounds really corny, but Alan Rudolph fills all of his movies with weird details that make them something special. And this movie, Made in Heaven, has a very strange supporting cast that includes people like Rick Ocasek from The Cars and Tom Petty. And then Deborah Winger, who's in like male drag as this kind of governing angel in heaven. And the whole thing is obviously, you know, meant to be a tribute to the Powell and Pressburger film, A Matter of Life and Death. And it's not as transcendently great as that one, but it has these really oddball and kind of lovely ideas about mortality and fate. And so I would just say that Alan Rudolph is an acquired taste, and not all of his movies work, but the ones that do, I find them to be so singular and memorable. And so Made in Heaven, I think, is a really great starting point for his
work. You've talked me into maybe going back and
checking him
out, because
I've never been a huge fan.
I saw 1977's Welcome to L.A.
That's his first feature.
I thought that was the worst movie I had ever
seen. It's pretty bad. I'll give you that.
It was terrible.
It's very
bad.
And
so that overshadowed my attitude toward him for the next 10 years. And it wasn't until maybe a decade later that I went, oh, you know, this movie's not bad. So,
and I think that movie in particular feels like a cover of Robert Altman's style. And he went away from that after a while. And I would also say that if Made in Heaven doesn't sound like your cup of tea, maybe try Trouble in Mind with Kris Kristofferson and Genevieve Bujold, and Divine in one of the few performances where he wasn't in drag. And it's set in Seattle, filmed in Seattle. Well, it's set in Rain City.
I was going to say, yeah.
But it was filmed in Seattle. And it's this weird noir comedy cartoon romance. It's such a strange movie. Choose Me with Genevieve Bujold is also really interesting. And Keith Carradine as well.
Nathan, you've convinced me too, as I indicated, that I should give this a second chance, because I don't know why I was turned off. I think the Made in Heaven conceit didn't work for me. And so then I was like, should I even bother watching some of his other films? And I really have not seen a lot of them. So thank you.
I think his style elevates the conceit beyond like Hallmark movie material. It's much weirder than that. So yeah, give Alan Rudolph a try. He might be right up your alley, or maybe not.
At any rate, you've been listening to a special look-back edition of Movies 101. It's now time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to continue our sharing some of our favorite views from the past that we think you, our listeners, might find interesting. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I just shared some of our favorite past viewing experiences. Let's continue with Nathan.
Yes, and again, continuing the theme I set forth in the first half of the show, I'm using this buried treasure show to talk about directors that I think have been overlooked. And in the second part, I want to talk about Michael Romer, and in particular his 1984 film Vengeance Is Mine. And you should just go on Wikipedia and read about Michael Romer, because he's had a fascinating life and career. He's still with us at 97 years old. And he started his filmmaking career with educational documentaries and industrials. And then in 1964, he made a narrative feature called Nothing But a Man, which kind of feels like a long-lost John Cassavetes movie, but it's a love story between two working-class black characters. And he followed that up with The Plot Against Harry, which is this kind of zany slapstick comedy about a Jewish mobster who gets out of jail and tries to assimilate back into his normal life. But what's unusual about both of those movies is that they were barely released when they were made and then rediscovered decades later in the 90s.
So hence your affinity toward buried treasures.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this is the definition of a buried treasure. And that trend continues with Michael Romer's most recent rediscovered film, which is Vengeance Is Mine, which aired on PBS in 1984 as part of its American Playhouse series. At the time, it was called Haunted. And it went entirely unseen until it was dug up again and re-released in 2022. Now it's streaming on the Criterion Channel. That's how I saw it. You can get it on Blu-ray. But it stars Brooke Adams, who's best known for Terrence Malick's Days of Heaven, Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yes.
And she plays a woman who's visiting her childhood home in Rhode Island. And we piece together details about her. She's clearly running away from several troubled relationships. She's drinking too much. She was adopted, but her adoptive mother won't speak to her anymore. So there's all of this drama going on. And then she meets the family next door, which is a little girl and her eccentric divorced mother, played by a really good actress named Trish Vandeveer. And the Brooke Adams character essentially gets trapped in this emotional vice with this woman. And at first we think it's because she's helpless. And we start to wonder if maybe it's because she sort of wants to be wrapped up in all of this drama. And it seems like it's going to be a pretty straightforward kind of domestic piece, character study. But it's weird and it's hypnotic and kind of weirdly repetitious in the way that these characters deal with each other. And it presents their lives in a way that is so mundane that it almost becomes surreal. And it's hard to describe this movie, but I would say Vengeance Is Mine, worth a look. And then all of Michael Romer's stuff that is available. There's not very much, but what you can see, you know, has been kind of pulled from the vault and shown in the light of the cold light of day. And he's worth rediscovery.
Nathan, you took the notion of buried treasure certainly to heart. I was calling this sequence dealer's choice. And so maybe that will reflect the sort of incongruous approach that we've taken. But I think it works.
I like the mix. I like the mix.
The one thing I wanted to mention was we met Brooke Adams. She came here with her husband, Tony Shalhoub.
Oh, cool.
For part of a film festival. And they were so nice. They were almost as nice as Matthew Modine, which is incredible.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, and she's great in this movie. Yeah. Again, it's called Vengeance
is Mine.
So
what prompted your interest in Romer initially?
Well, I saw The Plot Against Harry a long time ago, so intrigued by this story that he made this movie, and it wasn't until, you know, he was much older that he decided to put it out, and it kind of became a film festival favorite. Then I saw Nothing But a Man, which is incredible. And then finally this movie, Wesley Morris wrote a brilliant review of it in the New York Times that sparked my interest. And so finally I watched it on the Criterion Channel, and all of his stuff, all three of those movies are on the Criterion Channel, by the way, all of them very different and worth looking at.
Well, I'm going to continue talking about Maddie Diop. And so, again, she's a French-Senegalese director. She actually started as an actor in film in Claire Denis' 35 Shots of Rum,
good
for
movie.
Example.
That's also worth a look.
Right, exactly. And so she sort of has traveled back and forth between France and Senegal, the homeland of her father. And so she's immersed herself in these two cultures, and I think that that really enhances her filmmaking. But I wanted to bring specific attention to Atlantique. You would search for this under Atlantics, but this was a film that debuted at the Cannes Film Festival in 2019, and she was the first Black female director to have a film debut at Cannes. And this is a film that is multi-layered because it tells a straightforward story about a young woman who's in love with a guy, Soliman, in the outskirts of Dakar, but she's engaged to marry Omar. And so she and Soliman meet in secret. And then all of a sudden, one day he disappears. And we find out that he and a bunch of his buddies who had been employed as construction workers and were never paid by the owner have decided to make their way to Spain via the sea. And so we know that that might not end well. But she's trying to figure out what happened to Soliman. She's trying to hold off Omar and his family and her own family who are trying to push this marriage forward, you know, for her. So it appears as though it's going to be a story about love lost or whatever. And that is part of the story. But it's really a story about colonialism, and it's a story about class struggles, and it's a story about women coming together to support one another. And then it takes a turn into the ghostly, and I'll sort of leave it at that. But I thought that the way this was filmed, it does feel, Dan had mentioned in the first half of the show, that it almost feels like a documentary in places before it sort of goes in a slightly different direction. But I like her work. I like her willingness to sort of break down this genre distinction. So again, Maddie Diop's Atlantics was my pick for something that people might not have seen.
That's a great choice. And you mentioned that this was a Netflix release, or at least Netflix acquired it from Cannes. And so it's a movie that I think we all watched at home. And even as I was watching it at the time, I thought, man, I wish I could be watching this on a really great big screen. So maybe one day it'll get that kind of re-release, but a beautiful movie, a beguiling movie. We just recently talked about a new African film called On Becoming a Guinea Fowl, and it made me think of Maddie Diop's work. And so that would be another film to add to the list of films to check out if you haven't.
I would say that if you're a fan of magical realism, you might like Atlantics also. It has a lot going for it. At any rate, I wanted to end this by talking about a film that we did handle on the show. We reviewed it several years ago, and it is another film by Christian Mungiu. And we talked about him in the first half of the show. I mentioned how much I have an affection for foreign films and how much I admire the films of a country that I had never really, a decade or two ago, never thought about as a filmmaking country, Romania. But the director, Christian Mungiu, changed my mind. He won a Palme d'Or for the movie that I talked about in the first half, the 2007 film, 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days. But this one, RMN, which is both an abbreviation for Romania and the Romanian abbreviation for the medical procedure, MRI, is also something that I feel is really particularly relevant today. It's a story about how the residents of a small village and how they react when the owner of a local bakery, unable to find anyone willing to work in her shop, hires a couple of immigrant Sri Lankans, thereby rousing the ire of her fellow villagers. New York Times critic Manola Dargis wrote about one sequence involving a town meeting, and she captures the moment perfectly. quote, in some 15 tour de force uninterrupted minutes, Moonju exposes the absurdity of this body politic, of these so-called concerned citizens laying bare their grievances, prejudices, and tribal affiliations. In the end, she wrote, the people have spoken, and not on behalf of peace, reconciliation, democracy, and human rights. And if that isn't a picture of what's happening in the United States today, I don't know what is.
And how did you manage to see this film and I did not?
I think you were out of town.
Yeah, right. I think that you're watching Star Trek, you know, reruns, and apparently you're actually watching some good movies
Romanian
without me.
New Wave.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah. Who knew that that was a genre?
Oh, and I'm so guilty because of that. Yes.
Right, exactly. So I'm eager to hear your take on it, Nathan, because I have not seen this film and I'd like to know more.
Yeah, I liked this movie a lot too. Not as much as 4 months, etc., but it's such a fascinating, elliptical, mysterious movie. And I think you're right to call out that centerpiece sequence, this town hall meeting where he shoots it in that, you know, the camera is locked down and we watch as this community breaks apart before our eyes. And then he sends us out of the theater with an image that has been alluded to before, but we really don't quite understand, at least I didn't quite understand what it all had to do with anything. It's still, you know, reverberating in my head. It's a really interesting film and timely.
One of the things that I found most intriguing about RMM is that while the movie does end up focusing on these two women, one who is a woman living in town and the other is the owner of the bakery, the actual protagonist of this movie is this hulking masculine guy who, during that very scene we're talking about, while everything is going on and people are arguing, he's scoping out his girlfriend or the woman he wants to be his girlfriend, and the camera focuses on him while all this is going on, and it just tears you in so many directions. It's really a very cleverly made movie, RMN. So, at any rate, that ends another special look back edition of Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and I'm joined, as always, by Nathan Weinbender and Mary Pat Truthart. Let's take this moment to thank Cassia Fox for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the late, great Roger Ebert. Of all the arts, movies are the most powerful aid to empathy, and good ones make us into better people. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.